Coming up next on Louisiana Eats, we look at the venerable French Quarter institution, Brennan's Restaurant. This weekend would have marked their 6th annual Turtle Parade, which has been dubbed the slowest second line on earth. We take you to last year's party.
Welcome back to Brennan's, everyone, and just think, everywhere else in the country, it's just a Saturday right now.
And we speak with General Manager Christian Pendleton. Since the shutdown, he's been posting funny videos online. One became a worldwide sensation.
They were playing it in India. The headline was Psychotic Bunny with Saber Hopping Through Empty French Quarter.
We've got saber brandishing bunnies and tiny tranquil turtles on this week's Louisiana Eats. That's coming up next. But first, the news.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Amid demands to investigate whether shootings in recent months were racially motivated, a family in Kentucky has hired a high-profile attorney to investigate their daughter's death in March. Amana Elahi of member station WFPL reports the mayor of Louisville and others are calling for review of officers' conduct when they burst into 26-year-old Breonna Taylor's home, leading to an exchange of gunfire with her boyfriend that left her dead.
Her mother, Tamika Palmer, has said she was a good person. Taylor was an EMT who worked at local hospitals. Her mother has filed suit against the police officers who entered the apartment. And her mother has hired prominent civil rights attorney Ben Crump, who also represents the family of Ahmaud Arbery in Georgia.
Amana Elahi reporting in Georgia, Ahmaud Arbery was around Taylor's age when he was fatally shot in February while jogging by two men, a father and son, who claimed they believed he was a burglar. It took 2 months before the shooters were arrested and charged. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell says additional government spending may be necessary to avoid long-lasting fallout from the coronavirus pandemic. NPR's Scott Horsley reports Powell dismissed the idea that the central bank might turn to negative interest rates.
Powell says the economy should recover once the virus is under control, but he warned many small businesses might not last that long without more help. Powell cautioned that a wave of business and household bankruptcies could do lasting damage to the nation's economic output.
We ought to do what we can to avoid these outcomes. Additional fiscal support could be costly, but worth it if it helps avoid long-term damage and leaves us with a stronger recovery.
Powell says while pain from the pandemic is widespread, it's especially hard on those at the bottom of the income ladder. A new Fed survey finds nearly 40% of workers in households making less than $40,000 a year lost a job in March. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
Well, several regions in the state of New York have been given the go-ahead to start reopening by the end of the week. NPR's Windsor Johnston reports Governor Andrew Cuomo is providing additional details of the state's plans in getting back to business during the pandemic.
Governor Cuomo says New York State's North Country is the fourth region to meet the criteria to resume construction, manufacturing, and curbside retail starting on Friday. Earlier this week, Cuomo announced that three other regions, including the city of Rochester, had also met the required benchmarks. The governor says the state will keep close tabs on all of them.
We'll have a regional control group for the North Country, for every region in the state. Watch those numbers every day. Make sure those businesses are complying. Make sure people are complying.
Cuomo says the number of new virus-related deaths has stayed under 200 for a third straight day and that new hospitalizations for COVID-19 remain flat. Windsor Johnston, NPR News.
This is NPR. Doctors Without Borders says it now believes at least one of its workers was killed when assailants stormed a maternity hospital they support in Kabul. The attackers killed at least two newborn babies and 11 mothers in that ambush. NPR's Dia Hadid has the latest from Islamabad.
In a statement, the organization said one woman safely gave birth in the maternity ward as the attackers stormed the hospital. It was the rare bright spot in an otherwise horrific day when, as Doctors Without Borders noted, pregnant women and newborn babies came under attack. The organisation said the incident had forced them to suspend their maternity ward services in an area where decent medical care is already scarce. No group claimed responsibility for the attack, which shook Afghans long accustomed to terrible violence. Some local media groups suggested the real target may have been a guest house used by foreigners that lies behind the hospital. Human Rights Watch said the attack showed a blatant disregard for civilian life and is an apparent war crime. Dear Hadid, NPR News, Islamabad.
Nearly all pandemic-related lockdown restrictions are lifted in New Zealand. Many of the country's 5 million residents are going back to work. Malls and restaurants are reopening, but it is a new normal. New Zealand is still barring gatherings of more than 10 people. It's also advising individuals to observe physical distancing. No new cases have been reported in the last 2 days in New Zealand. At last check on Wall Street, the Dow was down 564 points or more than 2%. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include TIAA, who wants to thank the healthcare professionals, researchers, faculty, and staff across the country for selflessly serving the needs of communities. TIAA is grateful for their dedication and persistence.
Did you miss your favorite KRVS program? Well, we've got you covered. Visit krvs.org, scroll over Audio on Demand, select your favorite program from the list, and find an archive of past episodes. Listen anytime, anywhere.
Some artists count at least half a dozen instruments in their personal one-man or one-woman bands. We'll enjoy the multi-instrumentalist this week with all their things stringed and much more. Join us on the Thistle and Shamrock.
Coming up Sunday at 6 p.m. on KRVS.
Louisiana Eats is brought to you with support from Louisiana Fish Fry, a staple of Louisiana kitchens for nearly 40 years. Maker of batters, coatings, boils, tartar sauce, cocktail sauce, and more. Dig into homemade Louisiana flavor. From our studios in the Southern Food and Beverage Museum in New Orleans, this is Louisiana Eats. I'm Poppy Tooker, still hosting from home in this time of quarantine. In years past, Brennan's Restaurant in New Orleans French Quarter has been the site of many a happy Mother's Day. In fact, back in 2015, Ralph Brennan instituted a new tradition of celebrating the turtles who inhabit the fountain in Brennan's patio with a turtle parade through the streets of the quarter. Unfortunately, along with many fun events, the turtle parade won't take place this Mother's Day. But luckily, last year we covered the whole event, intending to share all that fun this year with our Louisiana Eats listeners. So the only place you'll catch the parade this year is right here on this week's show. But what an episode we've got for you. You'll meet Brennan's newly famous champagne-sabering Easter Bunny, Christian Pendleton, and we'll even hear from Ralph Brennan himself. So grab a champagne bottle and a sword if you dare for our special Mother's Day celebration on this week's Louisiana Eats. As the world shelters in place, now more than ever, social media connects us, distracts us, and reminds us of what we miss. 4 weeks ago, over Easter weekend, there was one video shot in New Orleans French Quarter that became an international sensation. You may have seen it yourself. It begins on an eerily deserted Royal Street. With nose and mouth covered by a bright bandana, a towering 6-foot pink and white bunny rabbit appears in the distance, brandishing a sword. Skipping down the street, it begins to sing.
Here comes Peter Cottontail, hopping down the champagne trail to savor for your Easter quarantine.
As the creature approaches the camera, it pauses at the curb, where an ice bucket with a bottle of champagne awaits. Using its menacing sword, the bunny uncorks the bottle, splashing champagne into the empty street. After carefully placing the bottle back on ice, the floppy-eared beast continues its Easter song and dance.
Bringing all the girls and boys, baskets full of adult joy, mask and gloves and Purell keep you clean.
The bunny sabers another bottle, and then another. If the iconic pink facade wasn't already a giveaway, you can tell by now, it's hopping in front of Brennan's restaurant.
Happy Easter from Brennan's. We miss you.
Posted to the Brennan's Instagram account and shared by the City of New Orleans official social media, the video quickly went viral. Altogether, the video was viewed over 25,000 times. New Orleans Twitter in particular had a field day. "I don't know whether to be delighted or terrified," one person wrote. "Stuff of nightmares," posted another. Brennan's bunny memes sprung up immediately, not to mention parody videos. So what brought this mysterious masked man in a bunny suit to Royal Street over Easter weekend? Let's back up a bit. After Brennan's reopened in 2014, new owners Ralph Brennan and Terry White started a champagne and sparkling wine happy hour. In the patio, to add some pizzazz, the staff began practicing the art of sobriage on those bottles of bubbly. The practice was such a hit, it's become a weekly tradition during Friday's champagne happy hour there and other special events too. On Easter weekend, just guess who might be wielding that champagne saber in Brennan's patio.
Here comes Peter Cottontail, hopping down.
While Brennan's bunny video has gone viral, it's just one of the several funny bits the restaurant's been posting every Friday since March 27th. To learn more, we spoke to the man behind the videos, the saber-brandishing bunny himself, Christian Pendleton.
Hi, I'm Christian Pendleton, the general manager of Brennan's Restaurant in the historic French Quarter of New Orleans, Louisiana.
Christian, I've known you for a long time, and I know you're a gracious host and you're a wonderful manager. What I never knew was that you also had the makings of a social media sensation.
Now, I'm not sure that I do, but I appreciate it.
Well, the numbers tell the truth. So we are all operating in crazy times, doing things we never could have imagined. How in the world did you decide to take on keeping the Friday afternoon sabering tradition at Brennan's alive, despite the fact that the restaurant's closed?
So the sabering tradition and bubbles at Brennan's has, you know, as you know, is one of the additions since Mr. Brennan and Mr. White took over Brennan's. And I think like all of us in these times, we're looking for those as many moments of normalcy as we can. So it's that virtual happy hour, the sabering, the bubbles at Brennan's. And then it was about everyone just needing to laugh. I mean, there is just everywhere you turn, it is nothing but serious, life-changing news. And at Brennan's, we want to have fun. I mean, we fancy ourselves a fine dining restaurant, but very much so one with a sense of humor. Like, there's nothing better than the sound of laughter in a restaurant. It's relaxing, it's calming. And so we wanted to bring that to all of our guests that can't be in our dining rooms right now. So the crazier, the better.
I can guarantee you that you could hear the sound of my laughing every time I check out one of your Friday new little Instagram videos. So let's talk about the material that you've covered. If I recall correctly, didn't you start off just looking a little dazed and confused in the middle of the street on Royal Street, wondering where everybody was?
Yes, and I still am dazed and confused, wondering where everybody is. Oh, where is everybody? It's Friday. It's happy hour. Okay. I can do this by myself. No problem. That was kind of the first one because if you haven't been in the French Quarter recently, it is completely empty. It is eerie. Just because no one's there. So we thought we would just have a lot of fun with showing people how empty the quarter is.
One, two. Well, that somehow led directly into perhaps the most menacing Easter Bunny. I really hope Stephen King got a load of the pink Brennan's bunny with the big saber in the street. Tell me about that one.
So the funny thing is, when we did it, there was zero desire to be menacing. It was, hey, it's Easter, and the Easter Bunny is an annual celebrity guest that sabers on the Friday before Easter. This was, again, just that opportunity to show people and remind people how empty the quarter is. So for us, it was very family friendly. It was very funny. Here's the Easter Bunny. We have a little fun with the songs and kind of trying to tie in the good advice that the doctors are giving us about COVID. And then all of a sudden, it becomes quite literally a worldwide sensation because they were playing it in India, which we found of all places. And the headline was like something along the lines of psychotic bunny with saber hopping through empty French Quarter. Kind of like, wow, like that is so not what we were trying to do. In the Purge music that people put behind it from the movie and everything, it was just amazing.
There are so many ways to open champagne. I like to do it a little differently than most.
My tribute to Fred Rogers and the Mr. Rogers Neighborhood. That was the very first funny one we did.
And then I grabbed a sword. A sword is a knife for a really big sandwich.
So is that what then gave you a little license to don a blonde wig and become the Turtle King?
I love my turtles. Here at Brennan's alone, I have 10 of them. Bechamel, Espanol.
Let's talk about the turtle. I never knew you had the Turtle King in you, Christian.
Well, I mean, I have always, Charlie Williamson, who's worked for Ralph for many, many years, his executive vice president, kind of gave me the one of the additional job titles of Turtle Wrangler. So, of course, the sensation that Tiger King has become, there was that natural bridge to the Turtle King. And then what was probably my favorite moment of that video is when I first came out of the bathroom dressed. My AGM, Paul Martin, and Laura Bell, and Braith, who've been wild in helping me do all this, they just could not stop laughing. There was no, oh, you need to change this, we need to add. There was just sheer laughter. Like, this is, they were, and Paul's comments was marvelous. Don't change a thing. Just marvelous. And so we went to it and had a good time with it.
Much to my surprise, the pink bunny reappeared. I didn't expect all that wildlife.
Well, who am I to deny people something, a little levity in life to not have the bunny return? And especially if you've watched the show, there is some references to bunnies in the show. So that was a very easy to pull that back in.
Bunny, let me borrow your saber. Bunnies, I bet you wouldn't go after one of my turtles. And you know what would happen if you did?
Now, everybody can just go to Brennan's Instagram account and just laugh their way through the entire collection, correct?
Absolutely. Please go on to Instagram, laugh with us. tell me I'm ridiculous, tell me I am the worst nightmare you've ever had when you see me in the bunny suit hopping down the street. Just laugh. It's good to laugh. It's healthy to laugh. We all need to laugh, and that's what we're trying to do.
Well, I know that we are all hoping that the virtual sabering will come to an end and Brennan's will get back to whatever our new normal is going to be. Tell me what you are looking forward to the most.
I'm really looking forward to seeing a lot of my staff. I'm excited to see the celebrations, to have that come back. I'm looking forward to seeing you and others, you know, having that first bite of eggs hussard that you haven't been able to have in a couple of months, or bananas Foster. I'm just excited to see those reactions and to hear the laughter and the roar in the dining room come back. It'll obviously be a little diminished for a while, but it's going to be music to my ears to hear that joy come back into the building, because it's very quiet right now and it's sad.
Well, Christian, I look forward to the next time I can be at your door on Royal Street. Thank you, Christian.
My pleasure. We are so excited to, it looks like we're getting close to opening here. And I can't wait to see you and figure out some way to give you a hug while maintaining some sort of distance, but we'll figure it out. I think I might go get some mannequin arms from like Macy's and just kind of reach them out and around and give people a hug as they come back in.
It's going to be kind of hard to put that wackadoodle Christian Pendleton back in the box, I'm afraid.
I'm that same person every day. Just ask my staff, ask Ralph, because sometimes he just looks at me and shakes his head and just, okay, so.
That was Christian Pendleton, general manager of Brennan's Restaurant and new social media sensation. You can find all his videos on Instagram at Brennan's Nola.
Here comes Peter Cottontail, hopping down the bunny trail. Hippity hopping, Easter's on its way.
Brennan's Restaurant is no stranger to pomp and circumstance. Every Mother's Day weekend, they host a turtle parade, which they bill as the slowest second line on earth. Coming up next, Louisiana Eats takes you to last year's party. Terrific turtles and Mother's Day merriment abound after the break.
That he's hiding everywhere. Oh, here comes Peter Cottontail, hopping down the bunny trail. Hippity hoppity, happy Easter day. Hippity hoppity, happy Easter day.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Bill Bolins from the Dirty Rice Show. Dirty Rice is on the air every Saturday evening from 9 p.m. until 11 p.m. So won't you join either myself or my co-host, Mr. Lee Klein, Peter, for the best in Louisiana music. Right here on KRVS 88.7 FM and on the internet at krvs.org.
Later today on This American Life, when Ona was a kid, her family was staying in a hotel, the kids all in one room, parents in another, and she heard something in the middle of the night.
And there was this woman just standing at the foot of our bed. And the first thing she said was, "You're just children. I didn't expect you to be children."
Moments when the normal rules do not apply. Later today.
Coming up tonight at 7 on KRVS.
I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Camellia Brand, Beans Done Right, a New Orleans tradition since 1923, and from the Napoleon House in New Orleans French Quarter, now offering curbside takeout Tuesday through Saturday, including muffaladas, gumbo, frozen Pimm's cups, and more. They may be reached at napoleonhouse.com and at 504-524-9752. With a history dating back to 1946, Brennan's restaurant is home to several long-running traditions. Today, diners can enjoy Brennan's world-famous breakfast and Bananas Foster, just as they did over a half century ago. The New Orleans mainstay also has a reputation for its high-spirited style and flair, an atmosphere established by founder Owen Brennan and cultivated by his sister Ella. Since renovating and reopening Brennan's in 2014, current owners, Ralph Brennan and Terry White, have started some new traditions while keeping up that spirit of fun. Perhaps the most whimsical is an annual event that celebrates 10 turtles who inhabit the fountain pool in Brennan's patio. In what's been dubbed the slowest second line on earth, these tranquil terrapins are paraded on handmade wagon floats through the streets of the French Quarter, led by a brass band and police escort. Upon arrival at Brennan's, the crew of turtles rolls down a custom-made green carpet into the courtyard. Here, the party really gets started, as General Manager Christian Pendleton sabers a bottle of champagne for the raucous crowd.
Welcome back to Brennan's, everyone, and just think, everywhere else in the country, it's just a Saturday right now.
This Mother's Day weekend would have marked the 6th annual Turtle Parade at Brennan's. Last year, Special Projects Manager Reggie Morris attended the reception and spoke with the people who make the event possible. Here's an audio postcard from the not-too-distant past.
So I'm Ralph Brennan. I am the co-proprietor of Brennan's Restaurant. And today we're celebrating turtles.
My name is Simone Rathley, and I am the PR consultant for Ralph Brennan Restaurant Group, and I had the privilege of being able to write Topsy-Turvy History and 10 Tiny Turtles.
When we took over the restaurant, we inherited 10 turtles, and we didn't know that, so we came over one day and discovered them. We decided to do some major renovation to the building. And the contractor said, you need to move the turtles because we're going to make a lot of mess here and it's not good for the turtles. So they moved to the West Bank, to Algiers Point, to stay with Haley Bitterman and her family. Haley's the executive chef of our company. And we thought they were going to be gone 6 months, and it wound up being gone 16 months because that's how long renovation took. And so we decided, because, you know, we love parades in New Orleans, we decided to celebrate the return of the turtles to the pond here at Brennan's where they lived for many, many years. And we did a parade. And we parade about 8 blocks from our office on the other side of the quarter up to Jackson Square and back here and just come in and have a celebration.
Well, the turtles definitely had to be celebrated coming back because they were a part of the history of Brennan's. They had been in there, but really not talked about as much, not as a fixture of what the whole history of Brennan's is. So we wanted to really shine the light on them.
What are the other festivities that are going on around the turtles? I noticed there were some hors d'oeuvres and some drinks and that sort of thing.
Sure. I mean, you need a little food and beverage to celebrate here. And so we just make some cocktails, some of our famous cocktails here, like our Caribbean Milk Punch and Bloody Mary. And we're passing hors d'oeuvres, and we'll do that for another hour or so. But we invite people to come in, and people come from all over. Some people even bring their own turtles with them. Some people just told me a few minutes ago that, you know, this is like their fourth year coming. A gentleman told me today that he brought his mother. His mother came in for Mother's Day tomorrow, and she's from San Diego, and he brought her over here to celebrate, and he's been here several years. And what we do in the courtyard, we've done this for a while, is because we kind of bless just about everything here in Louisiana. A friend of ours, Monsignor Nalty from St. Stephen's Church uptown, comes over and gives a blessing for the turtles. And then we have a judge. Her name is Lauren Lemon. She comes in and pardons the turtles, kind of like the president does for the turkeys on Thanksgiving.
May I have your attention, please?
Quiet!
My name is Lauren Lemon, and I am a judge in St. Charles Parish.
Order in court!
Order! I said order!
Well, this is the 5th turtle parade and the 4th pardoning. I have done the pardonings from the beginning, and it's been an honor. The privilege is mine. And I write these poems. That's been the way I've done it. And so I decided this year to do something different.
So last night, my phone rang. I had a call from Mr. Beeman. It was the Turtles. The Turtles called me and said, "We're scheming."
What do Turtles have to say?
The Turtles said, "You know, we're pretty upset, and we're tired of being afraid." They said this is their home, and they mustered up some courage and decided to turn the pardon around to Mr. Brennan and the people. And so they wrote this rap song for me. I've never rapped in my life before except to my children, and I can't say I'm good at it, but with the crowd participation, it worked out okay.
Very surprised about a revolt of the Turtles. Well, is that going to be something maybe of a second book? I'm not sure. But it was quite inspiring for the author who's talking right now.
She surprised all of us. Judge Lemon normally, you know, does a regular pardon, and today she turned the tide on us. She did a great job. I actually, when I told her how good of a job she did after she did it, I said, when you go to one of your judicial conferences, you ought to get up there and explain the law like you did today. She was wonderful.
But still, they're in good company. They're fed well. I don't see that revolt. She's causing a little trouble. We're going to have a talk with Judge Lemon.
So there won't be any turtle soup, at least not with the turtles from the fountain this year.
No, these turtles are safe. They'll never be in the turtle soup.
I'll tell you a secret. I love Brennan's turtle soup. I'm from South Louisiana. I grew up on the bayou, and we have pet turtles, and we eat turtle soup. We have pet rabbits, and we eat rabbit. And the list goes on. My grandmother, I have a video of her that I cherish. It's a black and white video where she is cleaning a big snapping turtle. And her husband, my grandfather, is wiping her brow with a handkerchief and feeding her old-fashioned while she is cleaning the turtle for the best turtle soup in the world. So we've had many turtle soups in our lives, and I've actually turtle hunted before. But these particular turtles will never be soup.
All right, thanks, everybody. Have a good time. If we can get the kids down here to help us put the turtles back in the pond in their home, that'd be great. Help us out.
Judge Lauren Lemon, Ralph Brennan, and Simone Rathley at the 2019 Turtle Parade at Brennan's Restaurant, speaking with Louisiana Eats' very own Reggie Morris. Bananas Foster, the world's most famous and popular flaming dessert, was invented by Owen Brennan's sister Ella for a special dinner given for Richard Foster of New Orleans Foster Awning Company. Interestingly, Ella was inspired by a favorite breakfast dish of sautéed bananas, regularly prepared at home by Owen and Ella's mom, Nellie, when the Brennan kids were just growing up. In the late 1940s, while bananas were pouring into the port of New Orleans, cosmopolitan diners often ended restaurant meals with Flaming Cherries Jubilee, a dish invented by the great chef Escoffier on the occasion of British Queen Victoria's Diamond Jubilee. Ella, with the help of Brennan chef Paul Blanchet, sautéed ripe bananas in butter and brown sugar, finished with a rum flambé, and presented that first bananas foster to her brother Owen. He surprisingly asked, "Why'd you have to ruin it with the ice cream?" Bananas Foster is incredibly easy to prepare. Heck, I used to make it on a hot plate in the dorm room when I was in college. The big secret? What a former Brennan chef used to refer to as the speckled banana. That's the very ripe ones. They're a little harder to maneuver in the pan, but the results don't lie. You'll find Brennan's Bananas Foster recipe on our website at poppytooker.com. One thing is certain. Brennan's Bananas Foster makes for some good Louisiana eats. With all this talk about sabering champagne bottles, you may be asking, where did this tradition come from? And how's it done? Stay tuned, and we'll tell you all about it when we come right back.
Hi, this is Nick Forster. Every week in E-Town, we bring together musicians from a wide range of styles for some great live performances and conversation. And we also present the Achievement Award to someone doing outstanding work in their communities. It's an hour of uplifting stories and music each week on E-Town.
Tuesday at noon here on KRVS.
Hey everybody, it's Drake with the Franco Mix on 88.7 every Thursday night at 9. N'oubliez pas, c'est formidable. Et n'oubliez pas encore de écouter le Franco Mix chaque jeudi soir sur KRBS 88.7 avec Drake LeBlanc. C'est formidable.
Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with support from Louisiana Fish Fry, breadings, boils, new air fry mixes, and more classic Louisiana dishes available everywhere. Dig into homemade Louisiana flavor. And from the St. Tammany Parish Tourist Commission. Located 40 minutes from New Orleans French Quarter, the North Shore's Tammany Taste features the chefs and farmers, brewers and bakers of St. Tammany Parish's culinary scene. Despite the restrictions currently underway due to the COVID-19 outbreak, you can still support North Shore restaurants and restaurants everywhere by ordering takeout when available and buying gift certificates as an investment in our restaurant's culinary future. Visit LouisianaNorthShore.com to discover more. Louisiana's North Shore, where New Orleans has come to play and get away for more than a century. Here's this week's culinary quiz question, brought to you with support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen. Where did the tradition of sabering champagne originate? And how do you do that anyhow? When you saber a bottle of champagne, you use a saber or a cleaver or similar heavy object to open a champagne bottle. The act itself is called sabrage. A properly sabered bottle causes the bottle itself to break off cleanly at the lip, with the cage flying off in advance, followed by the cork with the bottle's lip intact. Depending on the instrument you're wielding, it's pretty easy to do. First, whether using sword or knife, it's the blunt edge, not the sharp one, used. Holding the bottle from the base in one hand, the sword swiftly travels up the neck to the rim, where, with a single motion, cork, rim, and cage are released along with a celebratory stream of bubbly. This technique is said to date back to Napoleon Bonaparte and his amazing victorious army. According to Napoleon, champagne was a necessity in times of war, quaffing it in both victory and defeat. People threw bottles to the returning soldiers on horseback, who then simply sabered them open. In legend, this became a hallmark of Napoleon's army. But alas, it's the stuff of legends, having never been historically substantiated. The weekly sabering tradition in Brennan's Royal Street patio is creating new legends and lore alike. By the way, the ceremony at Brennan's is conducted with the full blessing of the International Confrère du Sabre d'Or. The confrère made a visit to Brennan's a few years back, where they inspected the procedure in action and declared Brennan's an official sabrage caveau. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats. When it comes to opening restaurants, Ralph Brennan is one of the most prolific members of the Brennan's clan. In 2013, Ralph already had 5 restaurants in his portfolio when he learned the flagship Royal Street Brennan's was in danger of passing outside the family. Although he wasn't looking for another business opportunity, Ralph knew he had to do something to save the iconic Brennan's restaurant. We spoke with him in November 2014, just days before renovations on the building were completed and the restaurant was reopened. Ralph, why are we sitting here on Royal Street today?
How much time do you have?
As much as you do.
I'm sitting here on Royal Street with you because it's where my family started. You know, they started with the Absinthe House on Bourbon Street, moved across the street to the Vieux Carré restaurant, put the Brennan name on that, called it Brennan's Vieux Carré. That's where breakfast at Brennan's started. But it really took off at this Royal Street location. They acquired the lease on the building in 1955, and the restaurant opened in 1956. And that's where, really, I think breakfast at Brennan's became famous. And in a sense, I think, you know, the earlier generation of my family created a meal period in that breakfast meal period because it's not your traditional scrambled eggs, grits, and bacon.
Describe what breakfast at Brennan's means to you.
It's a multi-hour, long meal that starts with traditional New Orleans ingredients like turtle soup and egg sardou and finishes with like bananas Foster. But I think one of the most important things that no one typically has at breakfast is some sort of alcoholic beverage. It could start with a milk punch, perhaps, or a glass of wine. And I think that adds an extra dimension to the meal period.
Give me some of your iconic landmarks, you know, of what coming here to Royal Street meant to you.
Well, what often happened when I was very young is that I was the right age for my aunts Ella and Adelaide to take me on weekends. And my parents back then were probably glad to give me up for the weekend so they could have a little peace and quiet. But I would spend time with them. They lived with my grandparents up on Eleanor Street. So I'd go over there, and then we'd come downtown, and the tradition was to go to a movie, and then they actually would take me to Woolworths. Now I'm about 7 or 8 years old when this is all happening. And they'd buy me a toy or something to play with because we'd come back over. I'm going to say we came back over to the restaurant at 4 o'clock. And they would go to work, and then I would play. And so my memories of this building at that age were a playground. I had the free run from all the way in the attic in the third floor, all the way downstairs to the kitchen, out to the wine cellar in the back. And I used to run around and play here and, you know, interact with the staff and try not to get in any trouble. And then, you know, about 8:30 or so, we'd sit down for dinner. And I'd have dinner with my aunts and have a wonderful evening, then go back home to my grandparents' house and then get up the next morning. My grandmother would make breakfast and I'd spend some time with them because my aunts tended to sleep in a little bit.
Uh-huh. Yeah, your two aunts, they're something
yes,
else.
They really were. Adelaide especially. I was very close with her, close with Ella also. But I had a lot of fun with Aunt Adelaide.
Well, all of us who grew up in New Orleans have memories of dining in restaurants. So you're a little boy, 7, 8 years old. What do you order for dinner at Brennan's?
I used to order Steak Diane. That was my favorite dish. I would order that, and they also had vichyssoise. And I grew up on vichyssoise, and my mother used to tell the story about a train trip that we took to St. Louis because her brother lived in St. Louis, and we went up once to visit. And while we're on the train, we go to the dining car, and, of course, I asked for vichyssoise. They didn't have anything like vichyssoise on the train, so she laughed at me for that. But that's kind of what I grew up on was vichyssoise and then Steak Diane. And although I loved Bananas Foster, my favorite was Crepes Fitzgerald, the strawberries. I've always loved strawberries, so that was the perfect dessert for me. And as I was growing up, too, I found a refrigerator where it was all stored, and I'd often just eat it cold.
So you knew all the nooks and crannies here.
I did. As I said, I had a free run of the building, and one of my favorite places was the wine cellar. And the sommelier at the time would let me in, and, you know, I'd go look around and look at all the bottles and the labels, and had a lot of fun.
It's all about relationships in New Orleans restaurants, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It is. And what I love about New Orleans, too, is the restaurant community here is so close, too. It's so much fun, you know, to walk around. And, you know, I've had a lot of my peers and other famous restaurants in the city call me, talk to me when I run into them on the street or something. And they're all excited to see this restaurant come back. And, you know, I'm certainly excited to see all of them doing so well.
Well, when you look at the Brennan's family history, my goodness, you know, you're talking about, oh, the other restaurateurs were all so close in the community. Well, my goodness, Ralph, you're related to a huge percentage of them, aren't you?
Well, when you look at the total number of restaurants, we probably do have a pretty high percentage.
It's so wonderful that you recognize that someone else with another name might suddenly own this iconic pink building. And that, I guess, is one of the things that originally spurred you into action.
Well, sort of. But what happened is I had someone come to me at a social event and say, you need to talk to your cousin Ted. He needs some help. And so I reached out to Ted. We had lunch at the Rib Room and had a second lunch at the Rib Room. And, you know, I tried to begin a dialogue to try to help them in any way. I had no interest in Brennan's. You know, they'd had it for roughly 40 years and seemed to be doing pretty well until the last few years. And all I wanted to do was help them. And I told him, I said, look, I want to help you keep it in anything that I can do. And we talked for almost 2 years off and on. And then there came a point where it became obvious that they were going to lose the restaurant. And that's when I stepped in and said, look, I need to do something here to try to keep it in the family. And it appeared no other family members were that interested. So, you know, Terry White was looking at it also. And, you know, Terry knew of my interest. I knew of his interest. And so we decided it would be best to form a partnership. And that's what we did.
So you formed this partnership and you acquired the building. But the building didn't have a name for a long time because the name didn't go along with the building. It took another trip to court to get the rights to your own last name here on Royal Street.
Yes, we did buy the building in May of 2013, and it really wasn't until July of 14 that we were able to acquire the name through the bankruptcy court. We had Plan B and C and hope that we would never have to use them because there was nothing better than to get the Brennan name and get it back on the building. And we did have several appearances in court, and finally we were able to get it. And it was a very emotional day for me, because, I mean, I knew that was that really completed the circle, and we were able to bring, you know, we'd be bringing Brennan's back. We were well along in the renovation. We had all these great ideas that we were executing, but it would have been something different without the name.
It sure would have been. It's interesting to me, too, that part of what you acquired were the recipes. So how did the recipes go along with the name?
Well, they really didn't. The court said we could have the recipes, but no one gave us any recipes. What we really got was a key to the door, and that's about it. That's about it. You know, we were able to get the logo, the rooster, things like that, but really no recipes came along with it. So what we've used, I've gone back to both of the cookbooks. There was the original cookbook that Ella and the family wrote in around 1960. And then Ted and Ellen, Pip and Jimmy, they all wrote a cookbook. I forget the publication date, but within the last 10 or 15 years. So we've used both of those books to look at the recipes, and when we've done some research online, and but we kind of knew what the dishes look like. You know, this is a very special place to me. It's a very special place to my family, and as I said earlier, I'm really starting to recognize how special it is to the rest of the community. And so that's it's humbling, but it also scares the hell out of me. Because, you know, people will be coming back, and you know, we're going to have to live up to all of their expectations, and that'll be quite a challenge, but I think we're up to the task. And, you know, I just hope that it continues for another generation or two, and I don't know if I can worry about it after that. But
you were born for this job, Mr. Brennan. Don't worry.
Well, I hope so. I hope so. You know, it's a place I grew up. I have very, very fond memories of being here as a child, and one memory I'll tell you about is a microphone in front of me just like this. There was a lady, Jill Jackson. I don't know if you ever heard about her, but mm-hmm. She used to do a radio show. And again, one of those early years, probably before I was 10, and my Aunt Adelaide and I were having dinner, and I think my parents were with us too that night, but she stuck me at Jill's table, and Jill stuck a microphone, and I didn't say a word. I was so terrified.
Well, I'm glad you got over that.
Yes, I did. But boy, for a little kid and a microphone, and it was a terrifying experience for me. But it's a memory I still have, and I think about often.
Well, since you brought up Aunt Adelaide again, I'd be remiss without asking you for the ages to tell us the magical high school date that Aunt Adelaide helped arrange here at Brennan's for you.
Yeah, that was quite a night. My aunt had a very close friend, and they were trying to get me to date and get to know this lady's niece. And so it was two aunts helping their nephew and their niece get together, and we had a wonderful dinner. And after dinner, they got us up, and they took us to the front door and walked us outside of the street, and there was a carriage. And there was a bottle of champagne, and they told the driver, don't come back until the bottle's empty. And so we rode around the corner and had a wonderful, magical evening.
That's a magical high school date.
It is, you know, and probably, you know, we were underage, too, as I recall. But, you know, that's New Orleans, and nothing ever came of it. We had a wonderful time. We still see each other every once in a while, and it's a great memory.
That was Ralph Brennan speaking to us in 2014. Several weeks, we've invited listeners to leave a message on our phone line describing the COVID culinary heroes who have been making a difference to them or their community. Before we end our show, we wanted to share this message we received last week from a listener in New Orleans.
Hey, Louisiana Eats. My name is Will. I'm a nurse at one of the hospitals here in the city. I wanted to give a shout out to Crew of Red Beans. They have been keeping us fit through all this, doing a wonderful job delivering crazy amounts of food every day to us and our staff. It's really a bright spot in everybody's day. Everybody gets excited. What's for lunch today? It really is something to help us forget about the worries of our day. And they've been doing this awesome job. So, yeah, that's my COVID culinary hero right there, Crew of Red Beans. Thank you.
Thank you for your message, Will. If you're a regular listener of Louisiana Eats, you're probably already familiar with the Crew of Red Beans. Founded in 2008 by artist Devin DeWolf, the crew and its signature all-bean-decorated costumes has become a New Orleans Lundi Gras tradition. The crew always had a philanthropic side, raising and donating money to causes important to the city. Devin's wife, Annalise, is an ER doctor, so he had a front-row seat on the toll this pandemic was taking on our hospital workers. What began as a single dessert delivery to Annalise and her co-workers grew into Feed the Frontline NOLA, an organization that soon after were delivering meals daily to every hospital and healthcare institution in the city of New Orleans. The meals all came from small restaurants, contributing significantly to their bottom line in this desperate time, and were delivered by New Orleans out-of-work musicians. On Sunday, May 3rd, they wrapped up this incredible initiative. In the two-plus months of operation, Feed the Frontline NOLA delivered over 10,000 cups of coffee and cookies and more than 90,000 meals. That translated into $100,000 into the pockets of out-of-work musicians and $900,000 to New Orleans independent restaurants. Thank you to all the first responders, the chefs, restaurateurs, and Feed the Frontline workers who made this extraordinary impact on our community. You all are true COVID culinary heroes. That's it for this week's edition of Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. If you're at loose ends these days, we have 10 years of Louisiana Eats editions available for pod and webcasting on poppytooker.com, along with recipes and videos, too. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, Louisiana Fish Fry, Camellia Brand Beans, and the St. Tammany Tourist Commission. Additional support for Louisiana Eats is provided by The Commissary, Dickie Brennan's latest venture, offering complete family-style meals featuring signature dishes from Dickie's other restaurants and DIY kits for home cooking. Takeout is available Thursday through Sunday at 634 Orange Street in the Lower Garden District. You can reach them at 504-274-1850 or visit online, thecommissarynola.com. Original theme music composed by David Pomerleau and performed by Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes. Big thanks to senior producer Joe Schreiner and special projects manager Reggie Morris, and to our business manager and social media maven, Maddie Mulladew. Catch up with us anytime on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, too. Louisiana Eats is a production of Poppy Tooker Broadcasting.
Get yourself a Tea Tosta Cafe and drop